It is now my great privilege to introduce our speaker for this morning. Ms. Sarah Kosciusko is with us, and she is a pharmacist with the Queen City Wellness Pharmacy here in Regina, is located in the Heritage neighborhood, and I understand that there are just a whole bunch of exciting things going on there, and Sarah's here to tell us all about it. She didn't say anything else about herself, so I'm gonna leave it to Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I run Queen City Wellness Pharmacy, and we are on Treaty 4 territory, the home of the Cree, Sotho, Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, and the homeland of the Métis. After just hearing this today, thank you guys so much for bringing me here. This, you speak to my soul. The things you're doing, the things you talk about, the way you deal with complicated subjects like religion, is just lovely. So thank you. I've made a presentation that we can, for pictures and stuff and something, so I kind of remember to talk about things. But other than worrying about your time, if you guys want to interrupt and ask questions or talk about things as we go, I'm happy to discuss, and I'm always happy to learn, and I get some of the best things that we do from the people that we talk about and that know a lot more about this than me. I'm just learning as I go from the people I work with. So I like to talk about the things I do through stories about the people that I've met, because I grew up here in Regina with immense privilege. My dad's a doctor. My mom's a nurse who was able to stay home throughout my childhood. My parents are still married. Like, as much privilege as you can have, I grew up with. So I started working at this pharmacy in the Heritage community that was a specialty pharmacy for diabetes and nephrology. But the people walking in the door didn't need help with that. They were often housing insecure, because homelessness and houselessness can mean very different things. A lot of them living with generational trauma and substance and mental health dependencies. So I'll just go through some of the stories and some of the things I've learned and kind of how we got where we are through those things. So the next slide is the one I'm on. So Jane, and all these are fake names. Jane is the first person that, she was very vocal about the things she needed. And so she was a huge catalyst for everything we do. Jane lived with substance dependency for as long as I knew her. She had HIV. She was on oxygen. She probably had FAS. And her substance dependency was to the point where she had serious fibrosis of her lungs and problems with her heart. She couldn't walk very far distances without needing more oxygen. And we called her Speedy Feet because she was just like running everywhere and running out of oxygen within blocks. She would come in with like her last $5, and we used to sell like chips and pop, and I wouldn't feel comfortable selling it to her, so I'd just give it to her. And then I started to notice the people around all needed food. So instead of selling pop and chips, we got rid of that, and we started bringing in oranges and cheese and coffee and crackers and cookies, things that were packaged because we didn't have a kitchen, and things that were soft because most of the relatives and community members that we service don't have great teeth. And so we started handing out food, and this started our food service things. And now we purchase about 120 meals a day from Carmichael. We purchase it from them so that they can further their programming, and then also we are providing food for people. We hand out thousands of cups of coffee a month. I have no idea how much. I know that my coffee bill is tens of thousands of dollars a year. Just to make sure that anybody that walks in our door has something to eat. Jane actually came in a few times without any shoes on in the middle of winter. No shoes. And so I would often have, because of hello privilege, I would walk in with my boots, and I'd have a pair of loafers that I'd wear at work. So I'd give her like my other pair because that's, you don't let somebody walk around without boots on. And then I started asking my family, hey, like, anybody has, like, clearing out your closet, can you please drop off, like, your shoes? And then I put a call out on social media. And that was our catalyst for our clothing program. And now, I don't know how many, I've got pictures later on. I don't know how many pairs of shoes we hand out a day and clothing and whatever people need. We just make sure we have it. Socks, shoes, whatever people need. She was such a, like, she was just such a special person for me. So for the first year of Truth and Reconciliation, when that, the first holiday, I asked my Indigenous staff, how do we mark this? I'm a white person. I don't know what this should look like. And I tobaccoed him appropriately and asked him, how do we do this? And he said, we should have a traditional feast. And so we had a traditional feast with a pipe ceremony and a sharing circle. And we had that in Pepsi Park across from our old pharmacy. And Jane came and sat right beside me. And she explained to me every single thing about what was going on. And the pride that she had and the pride that I had that she was able to share her culture with me and the light in her eyes is just something that I'm so grateful for. Jane died a year ago. And her mother presented us with the star blanket from her funeral, and it's hanging in our pharmacy now. And we've named the space for her, and she will always be very important to me. We run our pharmacy. Next slide, please. With the idea of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so I always ask people to actually look at this and digest it. I'm a diabetes educator by trade, but how in the world am I going to talk to you about your diabetes if none of the other needs are met? So, physiological needs. Are you in drug withdrawal? Like, that's a huge physiological need. That's going to overtake everything else. If you haven't eaten, if you don't have any place to stay, if you're not warm, how am I going to help you with any of your other health needs? And based on this, this is why people that say, well, why is a pharmacy doing this? Because healthcare starts at our base needs that we all have. So yes, while we can help you with your heart disease and your diabetes, and we're very good at that, we don't neglect food, water, warmth, rest, and helping people with their substance dependencies. Next slide, please. The most important thing we do is listening to people and asking what they need, so, and knowing what our role is in it. So another fake name, person I'm going to talk about is Amanda. Amanda was trading sex for drugs. She was HIV positive. When I met her, she had just gotten out of the hospital for multiple times, and that's how I saw that she had HIV, not being treated. She was skin and bones. And she was always in and out of the hospital for violent injuries. One time she was almost decapitated. She'd had people found dead in her home. And one of my friends, who's an infectious disease doctor, me and my level of privilege, thought that, hey, if you go into the hospital and you have HIV, there's this team of people that wrap around you and be like, talk to you about everything and kind of get you through the system. I realized that that didn't happen. She was in the hospital probably 10 times in the time I knew her that nobody had addressed this. And I just kind of sat back and watched thinking, well, somebody's going to do something. Somebody's going to do something. And nobody did anything. So I asked my friend, who's an infectious disease doctor, I'm like, if I talk to this girl, can I get her into you right away to get this dealt with? And he's like, yes. So I just sat with her one day and I said, Amanda, why aren't you treating your HIV? You know, you take a pill every day. You can die of a heart attack at the age of 85, the same as I'm going to. You know, like HIV, I'm not going to say it's not a serious thing, but it's a treatable illness. Like, we can do this. And she literally looked at me like I was telling her brand new news. She had no idea. Amanda actually came and saw me last week. She's been living in BC for the last couple of years with her family. She is very healthy weight. She is living this amazing life of driving grandkids to school. Like, I get kind of emotional when I talk about this thing. And she came in to find me because she was in town. Just her mother is ill here, and just to check in and give me a hug. And who thinks about coming to their pharmacy when you're in town randomly to give them a hug and to tell them, like, look how good I'm still doing? And we get these calls all the time. And how lucky am I that I get to follow people on their journeys like this? But doing amazing, and I'm just so, so proud of her. So with Amanda and these conversations I was having with my friend that had an infectious disease doctor, I started saying, like, a lot of the people that we're servicing that are on methadone or Suboxone aren't even being tested for HIV. Like, this isn't right. These doctors are dropping the ball. How can I fix this? Can I just get a blank rec from you? What can we do? This started us running one of the first point-of-care HIV testing programs in the country, being run in a pharmacy. We did it as a study. And through our study, we didn't find anybody at that time with HIV. We found a lot of people with Hep C. And we were able to just re-engage people into care and just, like, also opening those conversations. Anybody that walked into our pharmacy would be asked, have you been tested for HIV? So any one of you walking to the pharmacy would have been asked this question. It was not stigmatized. It was just what it was. And just opening these conversations and letting people know, like, hey, we should test you. Because if you have or if you've got any risks, and it led us to opening the conversation about what are the risks for HIV? What are the risks for hepatitis C? What can we do about these things? And try to make it an open conversation in a community that has a lot of HIV, because we don't want people not treating it. We don't want people not knowing. And so that's how we started that. And from there, we turned it into the first in-country pharmacist-led PrEP program, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis for people with HIV. So you can take a pill to prevent HIV. I'm really happy with that. Pharmacists are doing it. I'm a member of the board of the College of Pharmacists, and I'm pushing for that to be something that people can do. I'm very happy with that. Through all of this, we can move on to another side. The public has really stepped up, and go to the next slide. When we've asked for clothing, we've gotten clothing. If we move on to the next slide there. And food and shelter, and people just showed up. I think people want to help. They just don't know where to go and what to do. I've got pictures later on of the donations we just had this last week, and my kids on the strike day, the teacher strike day, they came and sorted all the clothes for us, because it was probably all those pews of clothes. And we took them to some other organizations and stuff to make sure that people where they walked in the door would make sure they'd have some clothes. And the next slide is, that one's fine. Camp Hope. Camp Hope happened right across the street from our old location. And we got a lot of grief for supporting Camp Hope. I actually had people walking into the door saying things to us like, how are you supporting those people? You're running this camp, you're causing homelessness. And I actually had people saying this to me, and my response was, how do you not support people? So if you go to the next slide, I actually at one point got a note from a doctor that said, I'm in support of other businesses in your area that have been affected by the drug-addicted campers. Should I have other patients who come to you, I will tell them to go to other pharmacies. I will not support a pharmacy that supports people that use crack cocaine and crystal meth. So a doctor wrote that to me. I also had another business say to us, I've been in business for 40 years, and to me, a local business should enhance a neighborhood, help it grow. Basically, it says on there that since you guys hand out food, people are urinating on the streets. I'm like, how do those things relate? This was also right at the beginning of COVID. I'm like, people are urinating on the streets because there's no public bathrooms. All of people's supports were being taken away. You know, us feeding people means hopefully they're breaking into your cars and your houses less because they're not hungry. You know, like, but we've dealt with that. It was very stressful. On the flip side of it, you know, I was named 2021 Citizen of the Year. If you go to the next slide, thank you. Me and three of my staff were given the Queen Elizabeth Platinum Jubilee Award. Now we've moved down the street, and we have a nice, big, awesome space on Broad and 11th, and we haven't had any more complaints. We're really, really lucky. We've got supportive neighbors, and we're still supporting the same community that we've always been in. So we're really lucky for that. We define ourselves at the pharmacy as a safe space. Full stop, that's the only thing we really care about. Everybody that walks in that store is safe. So if you walk in the doors, you'll probably see somebody sleeping on the ground. And that's good. To me, that person is safe. You know, they didn't have to trade sex to stay there. They're not being robbed when they're staying there. They're sleeping. They're not causing the society any harm. And they're getting some rest. We have a lot of respect in the community. If somebody walks in and they're flying some gang colors, I can just say, hey, just pop it away in here. And everybody does. Nobody cares. There's never problems. If somebody, gets in one of our, having a bad day and gets in our faces, the community wraps around. They're like, hey, this is our space. And it's very rare that we have any problems. I have my children in there all the time. I am the oldest of, me and Cookham, I'm the oldest of our staff. Everybody else is young women. You know, it's not what you expect to see in a place that services people that have a lot of substance and mental health issues, because we don't need security. Actually, that brings me to talk about who we have and what we do for security. So, back when we were in our old space, people used to tell us, hey, you need a security guard. And I would say, that's not the right thing to do here. Well, it's not about the money. It's not the right thing to do. It's going to make people feel intimidated and put in their place. So what we did instead was we brought in somebody who just could de-stress the area. His name was Lance. He was wonderful. He'd bring a soccer ball, and if people were getting heated, he'd just be like, hey, let's go play some soccer. Hey, do you need a haircut? And cut their hair. And just things like that. Just sit out there and talk to people in a healthy way. He left. His mom is now our store cook'em. And our store cook'em is our security guard. And I like to use the word security guard on purpose, because I want us to rethink the word security guard. And it's not, am I keeping you safe from me? It's like, are you safe? You know, I haven't seen Florence in a couple days. Has she had anything to eat? Where is she? Does anybody know how she is? And that is what we think of the word security guard. So our store cook'em, which is Cree for grandmother, she will hand out hugs and she will hand out lickens in equal measure. You know, wipe up your counter, pick up your garbage. You're on a timeout, go for a walk. And that's how we manage security in the store. And we all do. The amount of hugs that are handed out in that store every day is a zillion. It's just, we're so lucky. Next slide. Suli is our store cook'em. And my favorite gifts that we get, because we always get these little gifts in the store. My favorite cook, if you go to the next slide, Suli receives a million of these things. One of them is she got a little notebook saying, to cook'em at pharmacy, thanks for always making sure we're safe. That's a picture of her son Lance doing a haircut outside the store, which again, I got in trouble because you're letting hair fly around in the air. A legit complaint to the College of Pharmacists. Then the cook'em hitting rock is another one of my favorites. I think we're back one slide, sorry. Or back another one. Yeah, the cook'em hitting rock. Somebody's like, hey, cook'em, I'm worried about you being safe. And they gave her this rock. it says knockout rock. It's just hilarious. It's just so cute. Okay, next slide now. Here's some pictures of just our outreach. Like I said, we handle 120 meals a day. We have true interdisciplinary care. We have RNs and RPNs and social workers and recovery workers and elders and knowledge keepers in the store regularly. We're really lucky. We have a social worker that can bill directly to First Nations Métis Health, almost every day. So people walk in, they can generally get counseling. We also now have Namarin housing coming into the pharmacy 3 days a week, so people can get set up with a CARS table and do the intake. There's lots of issues with housing in Regina, but we're doing the best we can to try to bridge those gaps and bring the services into places where people trust. And starting just last week, we actually ended up with getting a social service minister. Social worker in the pharmacy, so we can do CIS and SED applications there. A lot of people don't feel comfortable going down to the social services building because of traumas. You know, if you used to go there for visits with your parents or your brother, you don't want to go there for help. And also, if you're being told, fill out all these forms, and you know, like you were saying, our ability, like our literacy is, you know, so lower in our indigenous populations, and you're just given all these forms, like, I know if, when I went and got my bank mortgage, somebody walked me through every single step. We don't do that for our most vulnerable people. We're just like, do this. Oh, you didn't do it. It's like people think that social services is this like conveyor belt that you get on and you're going from window to window and people build on and help you with the next step. And that's not it. You get on this conveyor belt and you go into this chasm of just falling off an edge and nobody knows where you went and nobody knows you're ever on the belt and nobody knows who you are. It's just, so we're doing the best we can to help with these things. There's me and Minister Hinley teaching him about Narcan back in COVID. My kids handing out food, on the street and us teaching Narcan and other things at the North Central Family Center. We help everywhere. We go into, we have great relationships with Friendship Center, John Howard, Carmichael, All Nations Hope, North Central Family Center, RITSIS. Like, just anywhere. We're lucky. We're not a nonprofit, even though almost all of our profits go into the community. And because of that, we can work with all the nonprofits in the city. Because to me, you know, the Hindus always say, like, all paths lead to God, which is a beautiful sentiment. And to me, all ways of helping people help people. Like, Salvation Army is great for some people. Some people don't want to walk in those doors because it feels like residential school. We need all of the things. We need all of the organizations to do a good job and to help people. There we are walking in the Pride Parade because we do probably the most trans health in the city. And like I said, everybody is safe in our space, full stop. Whoever you are safe. And so we, you know, love like our, the help we, and the support we have and give with our, to us LGBTQ community, we're very fortunate for those relationships. Probably the best part of my job is actually teaching people about trans health because it's such an easy win in healthcare. You know, like nobody's mad at you when you're helping them like with something they've been waiting for a really long time, as opposed to people might be mad at you about your diabetes care or something else. Nobody's mad at you when you're teaching them their first testosterone shot. Sorry, if you go back one. Oh yeah, those are just, so we walked, the smudge walk was yesterday at the pharmacy, the overdose awareness walk. We walked to the pharmacy. We've been doing that for the last 3 or 4 years. And this is just pictures of us celebrating with our people, you know, bringing cake for them on their birthdays and just celebrating. Probably everybody, a lot of people that know people know Crazy Horse. this is our logo, designed by Jada DeLorme. She's from Cowessess First Nation. Next slide. So in our new location, we've got lots of space. We've got, we offer free Wi-Fi, food. The new food bank opening 2 doors down, they're dropping off their food. We get lots of food, saving when you go, people go around and grab it. Then they bring it to us and then we just put it out and people, you know, take whatever they need, and it's nice that we can do all that stuff. We 3 years ago, one of the things we realized when we were going through all this stuff and people were walking in the doors, and again, from my level of privilege, how in the world do you not have a place to live? Like, to me, this person that grew up in my privilege thought, if you're leaving domestic violence or if you're homeless, there must just be a place you can go, right? You just must be able to figure this out. That is not true. You're leaving domestic violence. You might be trying to leave for 2 years and there's not a shelter. You actually leave, there's not a shelter. There's not a place for you to go. So all of these little barriers we've learned along the way, and we've built these connections with the different agencies and doctor's offices. If somebody walks in the door and they need a doctor, even though you can't get a doctor in the city, if you are one of our really vulnerable people, I can get you into a doctor. Like, I can get that taken care of. We spend thousands and thousands of dollars a month, every month, to send people in cabs to doctor's offices because of these relationships that we've built. One of the biggest barriers we had was the ID, was no IDs. So I don't know if anybody heard about the ID clinic we ran. We've now run 2. So our first meeting with Everett Hinley 3 years ago, we were bringing up this lack of ID and how is it possible that I could walk into Costco and they can print me my ID right now? And I know the government's obviously more complicated, but are you telling me they don't have enough information about me to guarantee who I am and to sign me an ID? Like, it's just ridiculous. So if you go to the next slide, it started off that we were doing treaty cards, and we got a number of Indigenous bands to come and help with treaty cards. And then just through serendipity, I was giving almost the same talk at the recovery conference this year, and SGI came up and said, hey, you know, like, to be honest with you, Wayne Manteca probably had a big part to do with it, because we were telling him for years, like, this ID, and he was bugging people and bugging people. He's just a phenomenal human being. And they came up to me and said, hey, like, we'll be on board with your ID clinic. So SGI came to the table, and they got rid of a number of barriers. One of them is the $15 you have to pay to get your ID reprinted. And the other one is that you need an address for it to be mailed to. Can you imagine that you needed an address to have your ID mailed to, but if you were homeless, you needed ID to get onto social services and to get an address? There was, and I talked to the ministers about this, and I said, I don't know why they take my call, but they do, and I'm lucky, and I'll use that however I can, but there's no on-ramps into the system. So we all say we've got this great system in place, but there was no on-ramps, and this ID was a huge barrier. So SGI came to the table, but SGI needed everybody to have their birth certificate to get an SGI ID, and eHealth wouldn't come to the table because birth certificates were $40 and they take months. They wouldn't come to the table with SGI. Again, serendipity, however it works out. I left my meeting with SGI and I said, let me figure this out. Walk into the main part of the pharmacy, and there was two social workers that I know sitting there, and I'm like, hey, anybody know anybody who works for eHealth? And they're like, yeah, let me send you a contact. And I'm like, and I told SGI, I'm like, what do you need from the birth certificate? Do you need the birth certificate? Like, didn't you see it? Or do you just need, like, a number from it? And I don't know why I thought about that, but I did. And they're like, actually, we just need the number. So I, on the phone with eHealth, I said, can we get somebody down here to just give us people's birth certificate numbers? And they said, we could do that. So through that, just, I don't know, being an outsider looking in or thinking about it one way, we got eHealth to be on the phone with SGI and with Service Canada, so people get SIN numbers, because Service Canada then just called me after they saw that we were running this clinic and said, hey, can we be part? I'm like, yes. So Service Canada, eHealth, SGI, all came to the table. And then for the second one, CRA came to the table to help people get their taxes done, because if you're not getting your taxes done, you aren't getting your MOBUCs, and you're not getting, like, just so many things that aren't getting done if your taxes aren't done, and to just help answer those questions. And then I talked to one of my friends. I'm like, who's a good bank, you know, that'll treat our people well? And they said Connexus Credit Union is one of the better ones. So called them and said, hey, would you have somebody at our ID in the clinic show up and make accounts on the spot? So they have everything they need in one spot to get on social services. And they did, and it was wonderful. Like, it was, yeah, it was wonderful. People left with ID, people left, and everything could get mailed to us. So we keep copies, because one thing people don't realize is, like, oh, yeah, we got their ID. That's great. That's done. No, a lot of these people are going to lose their ID every day, because you leave your bag for a second and it's taken. Nobody's trying to steal anybody's identities. That's not what's going on. They're just trying to get anything else in the bag, but then the ID is gone. So slowly these things are moving along, and I don't know what it is that brought all these things together, that it worked out. It took, like, it was a lot of years, but then all of a sudden just boom, 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 everything came into place, and I'm so proud of this, which is why it's important too that you don't burn bridges with the government and with the people. Like, you need them to want to help the people you're helping. That's how I look at it. I'm like, you know, I don't agree with a lot of the things a lot of the governments do, but I need them to want to help the people that I want, that I, you know, that we need helped. Next slide. This is a Christmas card we sent out to everybody, just saying this year we served 25,000 meals, 30,000 cups of coffee. We sent 2,000 people to the doctor, connected hundreds of people with housing coordinators, helped more than 300 people obtain government-issued ID. We handed out countless hugs. We clothed people. We dressed wounds. We smudged. We sweated. We danced. We laughed. We smiled. None of this could have been possible if you didn't fill your prescriptions with us, because everything we do is funded through our prescriptions. We have no grant money, no government funding. The song that you played earlier, it really moved me, because it talked in there about how hungry people will give everything that they have. And I'll just finish up with two short stories that warm my heart. Everybody's my favorite, but one of my favorites, was there, and I've known him for a good 5 years, 10 years, and he was cleaning out his bag, and I said, and I saw he had a scratch and went on the table. I go, "Kevin, did you win the million?" And he's like, "Nah." And I just joke about, "What would you do if you won $1 million? He goes, "I would open a place where everybody is safe." Like, that is somebody who's been homeless as long as I've known him. And that was his response. How many people do we see going around that have a million and don't do anything? And that is literally that is my experience every day. I'm so grateful that every day I go to work and my heart is just full. I'm grateful that the people that walk into our store, that other people would cross the street when they see, or that other people would not want to be around. I know that I've done CPR next to that guy, and he came and got us and wanted to save a life. And him and I Narcan somebody, and he did CPR. I'm grateful that I know that Robert DeChambeau, if anybody knows who he is, he's a Swiftie. I'm glad that I know that about him. These things that I know about people, it doesn't matter to me if they've been in jail for this or for that. It has nothing to do. We treat people how they are when they walk in the door that day. Some of the people that I don't care what they've done in their past. I know that they matter to other communities, and I'm really grateful that when parents come in and when we go to funerals and when we do these things, that I can say good things about their family members. There's a lot of people that will have their moms meet them for coffee at the pharmacy because, it's safe there, they're well known there. And also, it's nice for them to have us all walking up and being knowing and loving their child as well. Cause we do. We're so, so fortunate. Next slide. This is my last thing. The most important things that I think that I've learned, are that peers are our most important assets. So peers are people that have this lived experience of the people you're helping, not people that know a lot about it. I am not a peer. I am an ally. I've never been homeless. I have never been hungry. I am not a peer. I've never lived with substance dependency. So peers are our most important people, including them in our conversations. Nothing about us without us, for all marginalized communities. Make sure that we're getting their voices heard and that we're not just putting our ideas on them. If you ask people what they need, you aren't going to be competing with other people. So for my business, I don't have to compete with the pharmacy down the street, because I'm not trying to just make everybody I'm not trying to make what I do what they want. I'm just doing what they want. If I'm not trying to convince people that they should like this service, I'm just doing the services that they need, and then you don't have to sell anything. And the most important thing I've learned is if you go into a community and you don't serve that community, or you try telling them that they need to be this or that, or this sort of person isn't allowed in there, but you're in their community, that is colonization, not reconciliation. And reconciliation to me means that you service people with what they need when you're in their communities. The last slide is just my contact information. Reach out anytime.
Wow.
Thanks.